are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, September 11th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, good riddance to John Bolton. Even an insane clock is right two times a day, but it's also still insane. Republicans eke out a victory in North Carolina's 9th district, indicates 2018 sentiments unchanged. California passes, or I should say to pass, a huge new labor law aimed at worker misclassification. Polls show a weaker but still leading Biden. We were at the eve of the next Democratic debate tomorrow night in Houston. Majority Report will be covering it live. Meanwhile, Trump planning to use the federal government to sweep up homeless people in California. Unclear how. Democrats actually are in disarray over the question of impeachment. The North Carolina Senate and House begin redrawing maps for 2020 in the wake of that major North Carolina Superior State Court ruling. Protesters greet Susan Collins and Chris Coons over another heinous Republican judicial pick. And in the wake of the Supreme Court gutting the Voting Rights Amendment in 2013, 1,700 polling places have closed in areas that had a history of racial or religious discrimination. All this and more on today's program. And we have a special guest in studio with us today. Michael is out, of course. It's Wednesday. And so Michael is on extended vacation. Joining us, Nomi Kos. Nomi, welcome.
Hello.
How are you? Just pull that microphone in
nice
a little
and
bit.
Close.
We could do that.
It's
a little
like
bit.
I've never been on the radio.
There you go.
Exactly. How are you?
You have been on the radio.
I have. I did a lot of radio. There was a stint where it was just my whole life. I never left the studio.
I know that stint well. Yep. And I've alluded a little bit. People, longtime listeners will remember that in 2014, for about a month and a half, I was doing a radio show after I would do this one. And I think everybody, I mean, people at contemporaneously listening at that time knew the reasons why I ended it was because of the business partner I had gotten into.
Wow, had decided open about this.
I'm very frank about it. he decided not that the show was sustainable, basically because I wasn't getting paid anything.
Right.
So
sounds so familiar.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
Heard this story before.
Well, yes, exactly.
Valuable experience.
Did I live that?
it was a very valuable experience. I learned never to do business with him again. And there were times where I felt like I probably should warn other people, and maybe that was the case.
I wish you had.
Well,
6 months of my life.
There you go.
Down the drain.
There
no, but
you
it was
go.
Wonderful training. I
right.
will say, because you know what happens when you're exploited is they work you to death, but you develop some skills along the way.
That's right.
You become a superhuman.
That's right, yeah. And a thick ectoskeleton, as it were. Pleasure to have you here in studio. We should just say, I mean, obviously, I'll say a couple words about 9/11 in a moment or two, but let's start with this. John Bolton is gone. We had mentioned this on the show yesterday briefly, because the word just got in that he was gone. And in the main, like, this is a great thing for the country and for world peace. Now, I don't give Donald Trump a lot of credit because John Bolton would not have had to have been fired had Donald Trump never hired him.
Right.
Be that as it may, it's a good thing he is out. For folks who didn't know, you know, and I think hopefully most of the people know, John Bolton was considered to be so out of control in terms of his warmongering and just general disposition that a Republican Senate in 2005, maybe it was 2004, refused to confirm him as an ambassador to the United Nations. He ended up getting, Bush did a recess break,
mm-hmm.
Or I should say a recess appointment, and got him in there for a year. It runs out after a year. Now, for whatever, the Supreme Court, once Barack Obama became president, basically said, oh yeah, there's no such thing as recess anymore. That doesn't exist. But back in the Bush era, Bolton was a recess appointee. And so the guy's a lunatic. And nobody wants to own him, and nobody wants to be a part of it. And here is Tucker Carlson misinforming. John Bolton was one of the neocons who was promoting the Iraq War back in 2001, two, up into three. And then, was certainly cheerleading the efforts afterwards. He was part of that whole cabal of neocons. And here is Tucker Carlson, who I will tell you may have personally not cared about the Iraq War when it was happening, but was on television cheerleading it, cheerleading the run up. Mm-hmm. I know that he would go walk out of that CNN studio, have a couple of cigarettes, say, I don't care about this. But when he was on television, he certainly was cheerleading for it. And here he is again, in one fashion or another, misinforming his audience.
If you're wondering why so many progressives are mourning Bolton's firing tonight, it's because Bolton himself fundamentally was a man.
I mean, I'm wondering what progressives he's talking about. There were... I mean, you saw these tweets, right?
Yeah.
Nancy
Pelosi. Well, they think Nancy Pelosi is progressive.
Right.
Because she's from liberal San Francisco and is a woman and speaks.
Indeed. And she tweeted out something like, John Bolton is a man of honor and the president, blah, 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 which, of course, is just a sack of crap. The Democrats are trying to make some hay with low information voters. Mm-hmm. Suggesting that, you know, the administration is in total disarray. Now, that can be true. And John Bolton going is also good can be true simultaneously.
What's weird about this, first off, this is the day before 9/11. One of the architects of the Iraq War, you know, and biggest advocates after 9/11, strange. Also, you know, this is a former colleague of Tucker Carlson's. Fox, I mean, that I find really strange, the dynamic between, you know, pulling back the curtain between the Fox arguments,
yes,
and who Trump is taking his cues from.
Right. I mean, yesterday we saw Brian Kilmeade get an on-air text from Bolton saying the president, essentially the subtext of it saying, I resigned. The subtext being Donald Trump is lying about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Tucker Carlson is part of the sort of like the Pat Buchanan school of conservatism, which is much less interested in foreign affairs and imposing democracy at the end of a gun like a John Bolton is. And all I can tell you is that in 2004 at the, I guess it was the Republican or maybe it was the Democratic National Convention in Boston. Mm-hmm. A guy comes up to me on Radio Row. They didn't know anything about Air America at the time. And he said, you guys are liberals. Is that right? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, yeah, well, I'm not with this crew in the White House. I'm a Pat Buchanan conservative.
Oh, God.
You know, these guys who are all doing these wars, they're all Jews.
Oh.
Right? And I was just like,
is he
I hear
Valerie
you, my
Flame
man.
Voter?
Huh?
Valerie Flame supporter?
Very possible. But so here, let's hear Tucker explain to us now all progressives are upset about John Bolton.
Tonight, it's because Bolton himself fundamentally was a man of the left. There was not a human problem John Bolton wasn't totally convinced could be solved with the brute force of government. That's an assumption of the left, not the right. Don't let the mustache fool you. John Bolton was one of the most progressive people in the Trump administration.
Well, I don't know what problems he's talking about. I mean, John Bolton was, you know, his whole portfolio was foreign affairs. I don't know that Republicans have been restrained in their involvement in foreign affairs. I don't know if he's been aware of the fact that, you know, we've had multiple wars in the past two decades initiated by Republicans.
Is he doing a weird somersault where he defines interventionism as progressive?
I think it's big government. It's like his idea of big government is any spending that enhances the budget of the government, whether it's and then he's equating that with progressives, saying, well, progressives like big government, not understanding, or of course he knows, he's very sophisticated, he knows this, that expanding the war budget is not something that progressives.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you look at the biggest part slice of our budget and say that, which is driven by Republican interests. And to be fair, at times too much Democrats go along with it, but it's certainly driven by a Republican agenda. But there he is, Tucker Carlson, once again, spreading the truth to his audience. Good for him. Oh, meanwhile, folks, we just had a story about this, about Joybird. You can tell the story, too, if you want. But
you can lead, and then I can.
So one of our sponsors today, Joybird Furniture, they have a place right around the corner. When they don't have any too many brick and mortar places, but I go in there and I basically try out all the couches and just try.
He lives there now. I don't know if you guys know that.
Honestly,
he just sleeps there.
Extremely comfortable. With Joybird, you get one of a kind furniture that's crafted after your unique taste. You want a sofa in aquatic blue or indigo, a love seat in the hottest red? If you can dream it, Joybird can make it a reality. From rich, buttery leather to the plushest velvet you've ever felt, find the fabric and the texture that's right for you. Joybird even offers a range of kid and pet-friendly upholstery options that stand the test of time. If they had a time machine and I could go back and get that stuff before my kids, you know, Saul's on the tail end of destroying a couch. Plus, they have a free personal design consultant to help you nail down all the perfect design for you. And they have a 365-day home trial. Sit on it, sleep on it, break it in. If you don't love your Joybird, you return it for free within 2 weeks of delivery.
But what's the, I don't understand the 365-day trial.
If you don't love it, return it for free within 2 weeks. Oh, I guess you have a 365, maybe it's free within the first 2 weeks, and then after, I'm not 100% sure. But you can see how Joybird will help you design your dream space and make furniture your own at joybird.com/majority25. You were going to get a Joybird, right?
I ordered it. I designed it. They were making it. This was last year. And then, you know, it wasn't expensive, as expensive as other couches. They're really, really, really nice couches for the price. And then they were making it. And they were going to deliver it like in a week. And I decided, oh, man, I'm going to run for office and not take an income for 6 months. I probably can't afford this. So I called them up and they said, no problem. We'll refund you the money. And I still want that couch.
There you go. Yeah. Well, it's now you have the opportunity to take 25 off at joybird.com/majority25 to create the furniture that brings you joy today. joybird.com/majority25 and get 25% off your first order by using the code MAJORITY25. That is the numeral. All right, let's, obviously today is 9/11. Last night they had the Towers of Light that they sent up that they do every year. I don't know, you must've been like in high school.
I was my senior year of high school.
Jesus.
I think it was like the second day of school or third day of school.
Right, it would have been very close. I mean, the weather was very similar to today, actually. I mean, I think I've mentioned in the past, I distinctly remember getting out of the shower, listening to Howard Stern at that time. Yes.
Wow.
They thought that everybody thought at the time it was a small plane that had gone in. Mm-hmm. A guy called into Howard Stern and said it was not a small plane. I saw a big tire. I lived at that point, had a bit of a sitcom money. So I had an apartment on 29th and Park. I went up to the roof and with my video camera, because of course I was also had about 14 different video cameras at the time, and basically videotaped the second plane coming in. I mean, I didn't see the plane. You couldn't see it from where I was because I was north. I was northeast of the towers. And so I only saw the back. I only saw the explosion on the back end. And I had friends who lived down there. In fact, I went down there. John Benjamin lived on Duane Street at the time. And he had come up because obviously staying at my apartment because he couldn't go down there because the police had coordinated off everything below, well, at first 14th Street, and then I think it was Canal. And we rode, I think it must have been September 12th, and to get some of his stuff out. And there was literally like 2 or 3 inches of ash everywhere, everywhere. And just random cars that had been pulled out of the area that were smashed. It was very strange. And, and then for months and months and months, you would hear, processions that, would go down 34th Street coming from, the pile, as it were, as they were pulling people out. And I lived right on the corner from a National Guard, armory on, Lex and 28th or something like that. Maybe it's 26th. I can't remember. And there was blocks of people had put posters up looking for missing loved ones. Very difficult time in New York City. But this, of all those things that happened, and obviously the horror, you know, everyone was scared. I'm you know, was convinced at the time. I still am convinced that had someone walked into Bloomingdale's with a stick of dynamite and blown themselves up, half of the New York City would have left because it was a very tense time. We had to building on, like I say, on 28th or 29th and Park South had to be evacuated because there was the fear about the Empire State Building.
Wow. Because
just is some rumor. And so everybody evacuated buildings.
Do you remember right after 9/11, like a month after, there was a plane that went down in Queens? It was pretty far out.
Yes. There was a lot of things that followed that. There was anthrax that followed that as well. There was...
can I just tell a quick story? I was interning for Senator Schumer in Buffalo, New York. And the job of the interns back then was to open the actual physical mail. So we had to go through. They gave us what was the pill that they made us take?
What, to Cipro or something?
Cipro. That's what it, I think that's what it was called. Can't remember. They made us take that and then put the gloves on and open up the mail. And it was...
Yeah, it was a tough time. And there was anthrax going around. I mean, part of that, it's unclear. Never found out who was sending the anthrax around.
Really?
But part of that, they suspected one scientist, but it turned out maybe after his death that it wasn't him. I'm not quite sure. It was all of that was used, was rolled up and used in a way that in many respects, obviously for those who lost loved ones. I mean, I go by a firehouse where... the 8:30 in the morning, essentially, when it ever exactly hit, they take a moment of silence. They lost a couple of guys out of that firehouse up in my part of Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of tragedy on that day. But in terms of the country, you see stuff like killing hundreds of thousands of civilians in Iraq.
Right.
You... The explosion of the drone and missile strike program that we have, torture that took place in Iraq,
or
spying exactly, Jose Padilla, spying expanded, the authorization for use of military force, which has become a sort of way of short circuiting Congress's role in and what it did to our politics in many respects. I mean, there was obviously deep-seated problems, but for a couple of years, if you spoke out in any fashion, it was scary. I mean,
Bill Maher got his show canceled.
Dixie Chicks had their records run over and burned. I can tell you that, you know, having worked with Janine at that time in the run up to the war and after, she was multiple, physical threats against her. It was an extremely ugly time.
I got picked on at school.
There you go. And
yet John Bolton still, in light of all that, still couldn't get confirmed.
Well, exactly.
Crazy.
Exactly. And here is Rudy Giuliani, who I want to remind you before I show you this. Rudy Giuliani placed the command center, the emergency command center for New York City, against all of the advice from all of his advisors who were dealing with first responders and whatnot. They all told him, put it in Brooklyn. He didn't want to put it in Brooklyn. He didn't want to put it in Brooklyn because he was using it to as a love shack, to have an affair with, you know, and I like, it doesn't matter, you know, whether his wife or not. I mean, that's not the reason why you put a command center in World Trade Center 7.
OG
Pam. And yeah. So here's a guy who made the response to what was going on far more dangerous for people. There was no communication. Communication had been destroyed at that point with guys in the towers. And then I think like his buddy Bernie Kerik, after they got the new apartment overlooking the pile, ended up using that for his affair. These are scumbags. And
they never go away. Bernie Kerik is another one.
Never go
Fox
away.
Fox News contributor, yep. That whole ecosystem.
Here is how Rudy Giuliani celebrated, and I do mean celebrate, because it's almost like a fascist holiday for them. You guys in North Carolina, the North Carolina Senate today did a sneak vote, 9/11 in the morning, knowing that people would be out, to overturn the governor's veto of their budget with barely half of their house full because people were out for, you know, 9/11 ceremonies. Here is what Rudy Giuliani posted today.
Beautiful, for heroes proved in the self, their country loved, and mercy more than
love. I mean,
is this the first purge? Like, what the hell?
Right.
Honestly, like, the
paid for that.
How fascistic do you? I mean, like, how much more fascistic could that be if you were trying to make it fascistic?
But what's his agenda there? I mean, he's under investigation right now. I don't understand what the point, other than Rudy Giuliani taking advantage of 9/11 every time it rolls around to remind people he was mayor. But who paid for this?
This is basically his vision that you have these people who are, you know, this is their way of bashing the left. They listen, 9/11 was used to to defeat guys like Max Cleland, who had lost multiple limbs in Vietnam, by morphing him into Bin Laden, this was the way they took power. Look, there's, you know, there was the. It's quite clear that they were asleep at the wheel. They did not take Bin Laden as a threat very seriously. God knows, you know, how The bin Laden folk knew that we were doing a training exercise that day, a similar training exercise, which was confusing to people. There is no doubt in my mind that people who worked, I mean, look, bin Laden was a CIA asset at one point. There's a lot of cross currents in there. At the very least, the negligence on the part of the Bush administration and George Bush himself, when he said, you know, you now you've covered your ass, when he saw that that presidential warning. But for all that, the bottom line is they exploited the hell out of this, and they were incredibly opportunistic and much to the detriment of the country. And they continue to do it. It's just that Rudy Giuliani is an old guy, and I don't know how people receive this now. I mean, normal human beings receive this now, but it's sick.
Well, first off, kids don't watch TV. So that was, that one little part with the little kid watching a television. I'm like, oh, that's so
well, retro. No, that is set back. That was the idea was that that cop who was there dropping his nightstick so he can go beat up these protesters, he's going back on the moments that brought him there.
Got it.
And it went back to when he got pinned as a cop. And then before that, he was in the military. And before that, he joined the military ostensibly, I guess, because he had seen the towers fall. And that's what he was watching on TV.
Do you think that was a paid placement from that apparel company and Giuliani's 9/11 tweet? Because that would just be the icing on the cake.
I mean, it could very well be. I don't understand. Wait, where did this come from?
Yeah.
These guys, because I think they said that this was their Super Bowl commercial that wasn't allowed to air, but obviously they could not afford a Super Bowl spot.
Wow.
Oh, interesting.
That is so
beer guarantee? Demented. Charitable giving, beer guarantee.
Grunt style.
Wow.
It's like fascist outfitters.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very sweet.
Freedom, bacon, and whiskey.
Hell what? Yeah.
What if you just like one of those? Or two.
I mean, it's... style. What are we, Tim Allen?
It's, but I mean, it is really, I mean, you get all the different flavors that you want out of the right in this era.
Yeah, freedom, bacon, and whiskey.
It's a serious Pantina of fascism.
All right. Well, let's turn to what's going on. What took place in North Carolina's 9th last night? I mean, and I want to sort of tie this into what's going on with impeachment. I'll start with this. Here is AOC calling for an impeachment vote on the record. Calling out Nancy Pelosi. And look, this is, regardless of what your opinion of impeachment is, and I think people know mine, when you start seeing stories like this in Politico, where they interview, 16 House Democrats in interviews offered conflicting assessments of the status of the House Judiciary Committee's investigation of Trump, which its chairman Jerry Nadler bills as, quote, an impeachment investigation. Here it is. We have been in the midst of an impeachment investigation, says Representative Pramila Jayapal, a member of the Judiciary Committee. Quote, no, we're not in an impeachment investigation, end quote, says Representative Jim Himes, Connecticut, member of the House Intelligence Committee. Third, Representative Gregory Meeks said the House is investigating to determine, quote, whether or not there should be an impeachment investigation. Like, there's no value in this. And I said this yesterday, but it bears repeating. The founding fathers contemplated a Donald Trump.
Right.
That is why they have a method to impeach someone like Donald Trump. What they did not contemplate was someone like Nancy Pelosi, who is in the opposition party, who just basically says, well, he definitely deserves it. Every day we see new law breaking. I mean, they should have impeached him just on the attempt to reappropriate money to the wall.
Right.
I mean, there's so many, and she knows it. She thinks there's political benefit in not. And here's AOC disagreeing with that premise.
I want to see every Republican go on the record and knowingly vote against impeachment of this president, knowing his corruption, having it on the record so that they can have that stain on their careers for the rest of their lives, because this is outrageous to protect the amount of lawlessness and corruption coming out of this presidency.
Do you want the speaker to take that message?
I you know, any message that works, I would like them to take up that message. But personally, I think that it is beyond time, and we have to end this lawlessness and corruption coming out of the White House.
I mean, she's right. And, you know, we saw this. I mean, this to me ties into this North Carolina race. Obviously, this is a district that Donald Trump won by 12% in 2016. I think Mitt Romney, similar amount, 12% in 2016. This is a very red district. The Democrat missed it by 2 percentage points. Mm-hmm. It was 1,000 votes last time, and a significant number of those votes we know were fraudulent. Mm-hmm. But what the Republicans did, McCready, the Democrat, was able to bring out more of his voters, just not enough to overcome the fact that Bishop, the Republican, brought out even more rural voters.
Right.
Because Donald Trump shows up there.
And they do better traditionally in special elections. You know, erase the last couple of cycles where there's been a revived Democratic base on the progressive side organizing, and even, you know, Democrats in these special elections. Republicans traditionally have an edge when they get their shit together and start to organize. So even when the Democratic Party invests so much money into what I think is a very 2004-esque candidate,
right,
you know, a young, you know, veteran, an entrepreneur, was he a lawyer too? You know, went to Harvard and Yale and, you know, Harvard and Duke, I think. Very cookie cutter. Even with that, they still, if they put everything into it, and they still couldn't, you know, overrun the Republicans, who just have a natural edge.
Well, they have a natural edge, but here's also, I think, the thing that is not natural. You have all these people coming out because they're supporting Donald Trump.
Right.
And the vast majority of people who are voting are voting against Donald Trump. And if that's the formula, you've got to go out there and give this candidate an opportunity. Now, he basically said, I would not vote for Nancy Pelosi, et cetera, et cetera. But this seems to me to be indication that there isn't necessarily enough people who are going to be motivated by your coming up there and saying, I am just slightly more moderate version of this guy.
Exactly.
People are not looking for moderation. They are looking, they have their opinions. They're just looking for the person who can convince them that the candidate that can convince them that I'm going to act on your opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can't compromise with someone like this. And this is what drives me mad with the Democrats is, you know, we were talking about polarization. Yes, our country is polarized. You have Nazis who have invaded the White House and John Bolton's, and then you have the Democrats being like, well, we need to compromise and have people in the middle. You want to compromise with a Nazi? You want to compromise somebody who, you know, with an oligarchy, with monopolies? That hasn't worked in the last 20 years. And I think in places like North Carolina, I don't know if you've done work there, gone there at all, but there's a real populism there. Even in Charlotte, you know, larger cities, there's a real populism in cities, in rural communities. And if the Democrats are continuing with this cookie cutter approach, I just don't think they're going to be able to go over the edge. We saw it with Ossoff.
Yes.
Same thing.
Yes. And I see him running for governor in Georgia. And that's a little bit scary in that respect. I mean, I think, like, the bottom line too, it seems to me, and, you know, I've been, you know, following a little bit of this, woman, her name is Rachel Bitkofer. She is. She was a statistician who predicted the 2018 blowout very, very early in the cycle, and there's some things that I don't necessarily subscribe to that she suggests. But one thing I think that she makes a very good case is that, like, partisanship, you need to play into the partisanship, mm-hmm, because you have one side that is using partisanship to its full potential.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side that is not, and they can't, I'm not even convinced necessarily that you need to have a specific ideological set of plans, but whatever they are, they have to be in opposition to Donald Trump and the Republicans as they stand today. And that and clouding that, the fact that you stand on one side of the divide and convincing your voters, because there are no sort of like lean Democrat, lean Republican voters. They are either I lean Democrat or I lean Republican. And who's going to motivate me? Who's going to make who's going to inspire those reasons why I already lean for those people, as opposed to I could go either way.
And also just I think the way that we define voters in America is just dated. You know, the middle voters. Well, what does that mean? What does that actually mean? Are they conservative on some issues? I mean, my dad said it the other. He's a Bernie voter. And he said, well, you know, I'm socially progressive and I'm economically conservative. And I said, well, how I don't understand that. Could you explain it to me? And he realized after he's a lawyer, he broke down the argument because I don't know. I just always thought that because the media sort of portrayed it that way. And I think that's really what this is about. When you go down into rural North Carolina, which is not necessarily this district, but if you go into the rural areas, you'll meet people who hear Bernie Sanders' message. And they don't – this big government idea, it's confusing to them for the same reasons that we were saying earlier. It's – you know, what does big government mean? Does it mean I get health care? Okay, I really don't want to be paying so much for my health care right now, or I can't afford it, or I'm a small business owner and I would much prefer to pay – you know, to have Medicare for all so we're not losing so much money. I mean, I think that we're just defining them based on social issues and ignoring the economic issues. And this is where I think that even with polling, things get really flawed.
Yeah, this is the thing I can't, I mean, speaking of polling, there's a poll out today in Texas. They did a lot of polls apparently the past week or so in Texas. And
pollsters made their money.
Yes. And you made the point that, like, you know, by the time we get to Texas, there's going to be a whole lot of other factors that are going to determine people's perception of the candidates, right? I mean, if I think particularly Joe Biden is most susceptible to this, if he loses Iowa and New Hampshire, the narrative is going to be like, maybe this guy can't win. And that's the biggest thing that he's got going for him. But there are so in Texas. We have polling that shows that it's very strange, it seems to me. Joe Biden leads the Democratic presidential race in two Texas polls. Biden's at about 28% in two different polls. One's 28, one's 26. Then Warren, she's at 18 in both of them. And then in one, it's O'Rourke, but then one, it's Bernie Sanders.
His state.
Right.
Give it to him.
Right. And
oh, Beto.
But so here it is. So Bernie comes in fourth in both, or third or fourth in both these, in terms of who would get your vote in a Democratic presidential primary today. Now, again, that's today. Yeah. And what happens in the primary race may impact that. But then there's another poll that shows that Univision, Bernie Sanders doing best in a hypothetical head-to-head matchup against Trump in Texas. Again, you know, who knows? But leading Trump 48 to 42, Biden is more or less the same, 47 to 43. Warren a little bit less, but, you know, statistically not terribly different, 44 to 42. I mean, that suggests to me that there is more strength in a general election for Democrats than most Democrats think.
Right.
And I think ultimately that's going to hurt Joe Biden. Right? You tell me.
I believe so. I mean, this is somebody who's been wishy-washy on his stance on the Iraq war just recently in the last week, which you know, blew me away. How are you going to be able to have an alternate vision other than just speaking to the Rust Belt, which is, I think, his entire campaign strategy is, you know, down home Joe speaking to the Rust Belt.
Yeah, but only in the most shallow and pandering of ways,
course,
right?
Of
like
course.
He's not speaking to their class interests right. at all.
Right. He's not talking about policy. He's running a campaign as if this is my issue with Democrats is that they're too quick to hyper react to 4 years ago. The country shifts, especially with millennials, shifts dramatically in social media. And this idiot, Trump, you know, it's shifted quite a bit in the last 3 years. And so I don't personally even know if the Rust Belt is going to be as powerful as it was last time, this time around. Maybe right. Texas will be more powerful. But again, it really comes down to this primary process. It's New Hampshire, it's Iowa, possibly New York State if the governor has his way. Moving the primary
yeah,
date.
What do you make about that? This was announced, I guess, the other day that Cuomo's trying to move it up to February. He's also, yeah. I mean, it's obviously a big protection racket for incumbents in the state.
If it's matched
with the state elections,
which right. is one of the options from okay. what I understand. But it's, you know, it's a presidential primary.
So what is he thinking? What is Cuomo?
Yeah.
I know that his agenda has to be something that I would not like.
There's always like 15 layers of Andrew Cuomo in his thought process. The other side of it is there was an article, I think yesterday, saying a lot of incumbent state lawmakers who are running for Congress, a couple, would lose their positions, would likely lose their seats if they're running simultaneously because of the primary dates would switch.
And really they would be hurt by earlier primaries?
Yes.
Because ostensibly the challengers have a not as wide, but a deeper connection to their followers, and people who are pissed will come out as opposed to, or what?
I think it's also
just
a legal technicality. If you're running for Congress and the primary for Congress is in June of next year, whatever the date is, but it's usually around then, and the legislative primary is in February, if that's moved to that, because they're always different. In New York, we like to make things complicated so that voters don't turn out in an overwhelmingly Democratic state. God forbid the Democratic Party get its base out.
Right. So wait, I don't understand. How would people in Congress lose?
Not in Congress. So for instance, there's an open seat right now in the Bronx, right? And there's a state lawmaker who's running. He's an assemblyman, Michael Blake. He's also a vice chair of the DNC. And that his case was made in that if his primary were in February and he lost it, meaning he'd be running for Congress and he can't run simultaneously.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. So it would hurt those sitting state reps. Mm-hmm. In their attempts to run for Congress. I see.
Which is also, you know, everything in New York, at least on the Senate side, is down to a couple of votes, always, for the last, you know, 15 years. But we had the IDC,
right,
which blocked. So that works to Cuomo's favor. Like, he wants to be able to take care of some, you know, some people in Michigan. Like, for instance, Blake is a perfect example, because while he is more establishment, he has not gotten along with the Bronx machine. And the Bronx machine is really important for Cuomo. But we're getting into the New York, you know, but all politics is local. What right. we saw with AOC was more about local politics in New York, in my opinion, than having an extraordinary voice in Congress representing progressives.
Right, right. I don't think people were voting on that
in
New York. They right. wanted to get rid of Crowley and...
who is the Queen's boss machine.
So, all right, so why would Cuomo move up the presidential primary?
I think there's a bunch of reasons. There's a lot of delegates in New York. They're not really selected democratically, like maybe other states, like Iowa, for instance.
So he thinks that's going to help Biden.
Yeah, it'll probably help Biden. It's a closed primary. It's the most closed primary in the entire country in terms of Democratic primaries. There have been some voting reform laws passed, but he has not signed them, like automatic voter registration.
So he wants to make sure that he can control the electorate, and he thinks uh-huh. that maybe if it's hung out there longer, he'll have yeah. less control over who shows up at the polls.
Yeah. So if it's between Iowa and New Hampshire, that's crazy. And California's primary has been moved up as well. It's a more open primary.
Yep.
You know, they're not New York by any means, but you know, New York, I think he also just wants New York to be important again. I believe that Bernie Sanders' election ended in New York in April last time around, but it was also because it was an extremely close primary. People, you had to be registered as a Democrat over a year in advance if you were switching parties. And so we have so many independents here, especially young people
yep.
who are Bernie Sanders supporters that couldn't change their party registration. And we have a really archaic, you know, Board of Elections system, so people's votes get lost all the time.
That is why I register as a Democrat in New York for a long time.
Public service announcement.
I want
do it now.
To choose. Yeah, exactly.
Do
I want to.
Now.
If you want to be able to, I mean, if you can stomach the idea that somebody could find out that you're registered as a Democrat, But you want to have a voice
right.
in determining who of the two most viable candidates,
right.
The more to the left would right. word one is going to be. You got to register as a Democrat, and you know.
Yo, to all you ultra leftists who think you're too cool to register as a Democrat. I'm registered as a Democrat and I am extremely cool.
There you go. I mean, honestly,
I am, and I hate the party,
but it really, I mean,
they hate me.
You're half joking, but you're not.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing, is like the idea that it's like, it wouldn't be cool for me to be a Democrat. Like there is nothing else
right.
that is involved with registering as a Democrat in New York, at least, other than you get the opportunity to vote. In the Democratic primary.
Taking it, you know, to another, we're not an open primary state, meaning if you're registered as a Democrat, you can vote Democrat in a Democratic primary. But if you're registered under another party, like Green Party, for instance, you can't.
Right.
And the Green Party and other third parties, they rely on having people registered and voting on their party line. But that doesn't mean you don't have to be registered as a Democrat in the Democratic primary, meaning if you're going to vote on that party line in the general election, you can still vote on that party line.
I don't think I've voted for a Democrat in the general election under the Democratic line in any race, any time, unless that's the only party line they're on. But more often than not, it's WFP. Right. And I will vote on the WFP line. At one point, I asked those folks, like, you know, is it good for me to register as a Democrat? And they're like, no, don't register as a Democrat. They said, yes, register as a Democrat. Don't register as a Working Families Party member.
Right.
Just vote on our line.
Right.
Because that's what determines, you know, what empowers us.
In the general.
In the general election.
In the general, because you can't do that in the primary.
You can't do that in primary because right. they don't, first of all, they don't have primaries in the Working Families Party or in most of the other parties. There's no value in it.
Right.
You can vote on any line you want. Right. And it's just I think it's a very simple thing, but like understanding that
yeah.
and sort of being able to sort of swallow, like, I don't get to say that I'm not registered as a Democrat.
Right.
And I understand the value of that. I mean, certainly I understand the value of it. But the value of registering as a Democrat is that you actually get to exert some tiny, tiny modicum of power in that election.
And that's why they don't want you to be able to register.
Right.
So stick it to them. You have until October 11th, if this primary date isn't changed, to change your registration, go to the Board of Elections, New York Board of Elections website, print out the form, sign it, you have to sign it, and mail it, because we don't do things easily in New York.
So, all right, I just want to just hammer home this point one more time about North Carolina.
Right.
Here's a clip of Dan Bishop. He is the new congressman from North Carolina's 9th District. Incidentally, the 9th District may not be the 9th District come 2020. So he's there for about a year and a half, maybe, or a year and change. I would imagine this district is going to change like others. And, you know, when you win by 2 percentage points mm-hmm. and when you're talking about a presidential election where Democrats tend to come out more, mm-hmm. A slight change in the composition of this district and that Democrat has a very good shot.
What? Before we play the clip, do you know what the legislature makeup is and who oversees redistricting?
Well, they just had a major case in North Carolina. And right now I can show you who's in charge of redistricting. Bring this up. A state superior court in North Carolina a week ago invalidated the state lines there. I think in part because they realized that the more information was coming out from this godfather of the gerrymandering, this guy Hofstetter, who had all the documents on his hard drives that his daughter had basically revealed. And it was quite clear that these districts were not only extremely partisan gerrymandered, but they were done so based on race. And so these were going to be struck down. The Republicans have not fought it. Instead, what they've done, and I don't think this is as nefarious as it looks, mm-hmm. they apparently ran 100 or 1,000 different potential plans through a computer. They got the top five. Democrats do have an issue with some of the algorithms that there was used to determine this. But here in the North Carolina Senate is how they picked which of the five they were going to do. They brought in their lottery machine. Go ahead, run this.
I'll just say, if you're ready, then go ahead and activate the machine.
So this is, they have five plans, five balls, and this is how they're, you want to know how they're going to, there it is. And that's how they're going to pick their maps, at least in the Senate. But here is Dan Bishop. Real. And he is, this is what I was saying about, you have polarization, you have hyperpartisanship. You can either participate in it or lose. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only two choices. When they do it, it has to be met, because anybody who is not attracted to this is attracted to voting against Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to sell that hard. And I don't think McCready quite did, but here is Bishop.
We've all watched as the Democratic Party the Socialist Democrat Party
you had to get in the Democrat
seeks the president's destruction every day. We've seen a dishonest media.
He's laughing. He can't even believe he's saying this.
Serve as their handmaidens and their allies in that mission. We've watched as the greatest fighter ever to occupy the White House has brushed them all off.
I mean, the bottom line is, if you're a Trump fan, if you're in any way offended by, you know, the an attack on Donald Trump, you're going to vote for that guy. Mm-hmm. So you've got to go after your people by saying, we're going to go after Trump. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that happened as much as it should have in that race.
You know what I would love to see is Democrats pay for a mailer that goes to Republicans with a quote of Nancy Pelosi saying, we are not a socialist party.
It's not gonna, I mean, well,
I
but that's their,
yeah.
But that's
capitalist their, and that's just the way it is,
right.
but that is their theory, is that somehow that's going to move Republican voters, right. And it's not,
right.
They're just gonna go like, well, I'm still gonna go and vote. Like it's a complete misread of it. Really gets down to the difference between being a persuasion election versus a mobilization election.
Although I do think that there is something clicking with an older older voters. I don't know if I necessarily totally agree on this, because I have family in Arizona and they hate Trump. They hate Trump, and they identify as, like, you know, independent Republicans, like McCain. I mean, there's a lot of that in Arizona.
Right.
And one of my family members called me up recently, and she's a Democrat and she's in a family of Republicans. And she says, I just don't know what to think about AOC. I'm listening to all my friends and they think that she is bringing communism to America. And I go, well, do you know what communism is? And then, and I do think that there's an era of voters that do turn out in these primaries and do turn out in special elections that are the Fox News viewers, that are not our Democratic base, that are not, you know, in Brooklyn and the Bronx and want impeachment right away. And they really are scared of socialism. I mean, I hear it on NPR with hosts on NPR, right. Bring this up.
No, I mean, I agree. I agree with that concept. That they're afraid, and I do think that is, you know, it's a tough hill to climb. Like, I'm not sure I would have chosen to sort of like make that DSA speech that Bernie did at the beginning.
DSA member, and I don't know if I agree with that either.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that would have been my agenda. Right. I think to educate the populace on this at that point is a hard road to. I'm much more interested in the policies. I don't care what you call it. Yep. And I think the right has a machine and is much better. Like, you just look at the polling, more Republicans know who AOC is than Democrats. They have been very successful,
right.
In defying. That's why, you know, you have relatives in Arizona who are like, she's a communist, because I saw it on Fox News and I hear it on every, and particularly as you get into the center of the country, that's dominated by conservative media. And
what's the class position of these relatives in Arizona? Would you say?
Position?
Yeah.
Mixed, but I would say that, you know, probably it's Arizona. So middle-class Arizona.
Okay, because there's
working middle class.
Yeah, because there are some people who are scared of the word because they grew up in the Cold War era. And then there are some people who are scared of the word and the policies because it will involve paying more in taxes.
I don't think they're that sophisticated in their analysis. I mean, it was basically, and I'm also looking at their Facebook walls. I don't block your family members who are Republicans, because to me it is fascinating to see the fights on their walls and where their lines are, because there are some Republicans that are anti-Trump or critical, don't like his style, but will still vote for him. And I want to know exactly what that spectrum is. Because those are the people I think that we can move, just as if, you know, they're moving.
But are those the people, like, I mean, but can we, though? I mean, because when you, because there's a cost associated with trying to move them.
Yes. My uncle's a Republican who hates Trump and is going to vote for a Democrat. Doesn't matter who it is. He told me, he goes, get your party together. Like he, you know, sophisticated DNC analysis right. that he is. He's like, get your party together because there's too many candidates and you're all going to eat each other alive, and Trump is taking advantage of that.
Right. All right. So that guy's off the, I mean, he's off the board. He's going to vote for the Democrat. But I'm saying, like, and he's going to do it because he hates Trump.
Right.
So he's a Trump hater. And put aside, like, you know, the idea is, like, you don't have to persuade that guy. Anything you do, like, anything that you do to attempt to persuade that guy is going to cut against the other end right. of your party.
Right.
And I just don't think that those people are persuadable as much as, like, there are some there and there are some not.
Right.
And the return on investment in using persuasion is less, it right. seems to me, than the return on investment in getting people who are already basically agree with you, but don't necessarily feel moved. And that is a very broad, that's a very broad category. You know, what it takes to move people. For some, I think it's just sort of like visceral stuff. For others, mm-hmm. it might be more policy oriented. For some, I think it's just sort of like, we're going to impeach the guy. Mm-hmm. We're going to put him in chains. Like, you could go out there and say, we're just going to put him in chains afterwards. And that might motivate people. I mean, I think, but whatever moves them on some type of visceral level,
right?
It's really less about persuading them of what side of the divide they're on and more persuading them of the stakes that right. are involved in that vote. And I think that's why when we had people staying at home in, in Wisconsin, aside from the voter suppression, or in Michigan, or in Pennsylvania, I think it wasn't so much that they didn't agree with the policy sets of Hillary Clinton. I think that they were just felt like, she's not going to do anything. So there's no stakes here for me.
Well, that was interesting also with my uncle, was that he told me he would have voted for Bernie Sanders if he was able to in the primary. And, like, this is a guy I've been fighting with my whole life, who's an NRA member, has guns on his wall. I'm like, what is going on here? This is just like poof. But there's a lot of this, you know, going back to what are we polling on?
Right.
This is a confusing, you know, no labels world that we live in, supposedly, where people don't trust institutions. But he would have been motivated to turn out. He couldn't do it for Hillary.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break and head into the fun half of the program. We will take some phone calls and do some IMs. We got some more sound to go at. And we'll talk about this AB5, which is a big deal. And it, you know, Uber and Lyft and TaskRabbit and, you know, whatever it is, you know, $5, you know, Fiverr, I don't know if Fiverr is doing that, but those gig economy things are they're freaking out because people are going to have to get, are going to be classified as employees. That means that they're going to be put into the Social Security system. It means that they're going to have workers' comp coverage. Mm-hmm. That means that they're going to have unemployment insurance. And we will talk more about that. That's going to have implications across the country, I think. In the meantime, just a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you get extra content every day. Do we ever put up that Hannity thing?
I believe so, yes.
So in your members feed, there should be extra
bonus. If not, it will be done today because I'm uploading.
There you go. Wait, that didn't. You got to do that. You got to do my board. There you go. So join the majorityreport.com. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off, and the AM quickie. It's in your Majority Report audio podcast feed. Just go on to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe to the Majority Report feed, and you will get the AM quickie. We're just a couple of weeks away from it being living on its own. We just found, I think we found some logos, right?
Oh, yeah.
Very close. Very, very close. Michael's not here today, but you can go check out TMBS. It's on iTunes and at Patreon, patreon.com/TMBS and YouTube. He had a big show last night. And Jamie, the Antifada.
Yeah, this week on the Antifada, we speak with our friend Sophie St. Thomas, who is a sex and weed journalist. Pretty cool job.
Yeah.
About my trip to LA, hurricane sex, pickup artist magic, relationship boredigism, and I got her take on Alexandra Kollontai's celebrated essay, Make Way for Winged Eros, A Letter to Working Youth. I also want to plug the article that I wrote on the DSA convention. If you haven't read it yet, you should. It's in Commune Magazine. So go to communemag.com and check it out. It's called When the Wave Crashes. Also, we're doing a live show October 12th at Littlefield. So come to that. Also, Close the Camps NYC is doing a direct action this weekend, and they need way more people. So if you're interested in that, go to closethecampsnyc.com.
And we'll put those links in the podcast feed.
Indeed.
And Nomi, join us for the fun half.
Yes, I'm here.
Great.
Where I'm going to be announcing my podcast called Hurricane Sex.
There you go.
What?
I feel like that would sell.
It probably would.
We'll be right back. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?